Mr. Thomas Parry.
Mr. Matt Boyle.
How are we?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. It's always good to see you.
Likewise, likewise.
On the trajectory to talk about some video game type stuff. I mean, we haven't done this for a little while again, so I've got plenty to tell you about.
I've got plenty to tell you about as well. Unfortunately, not all great. Let's get into it. It's Tom and Matt Attack. Yeah,
are you all right, Matt? You haven't been traumatized by playing some video game, have you?
I haven't been traumatized. I think traumatized is a strong way to put slightly disappointed, a bit
underwhelmed.
Underwhelmed, yeah, I think would be the correct word. There's a game, Tom. There's a demo out now. Actually, the game itself will be releasing next week, and I'm sure then people will form more of an opinion on it after they've played a bit more. That has a demo on the PlayStation 5. It's called Stellar Blade. Stop me if you've seen this one before. It's a female android lady, slightly risque in terms of appearance and jiggle physics and all of this kind of stuff. And she's flying around a wood with a big sword, and there's slightly operatic music playing in the background.
It ticks all the boxes so far, doesn't it, Matt?
Yeah, it should. It should. Except it doesn't really, and that's a bit of a disappointment to me.
I've also played the demo, so I can empathise with you there.
Good. Well, let's get empathetic, Tom Parry. I played Stellar Blade. I'm so underwhelmed by it. Admittedly, right, I went into this with a bit of scepticism because I've heard that this demo was out, and I've heard people talk about it, and generally it's all like, ha ha ha, you can put her in a skin suit, and I'm just like, oh well, if that's all people have got to say, there's that the you know, the male gaze is the thing to bring to this thing, then I'm like, okay, this isn't going to be great then, is
it?
And
I went in. I've done it all before, Matt. I don't know if you're going to also say that, but that's how
I felt. That was literally what I was about to say. I feel like I've done this, and I feel like I've done it better, and I feel like Nier Automata, for its faults, they're very few, and it just felt to me like I was like, oh, well, you know, I've been reading a lot of manga lately, and I've been reading a lot of, like, quote-unquote foundational texts, and going, oh, well, this is clearly, like, Urusei Yatsura is clearly where things I like Tenshi have come from. I can see the progression here. This is really nice. So like, oh, Dragon Ball clearly inspired this in things like One Piece and Bleach and everything else. And just going, oh, well, you know, everything's in conversation with itself. Isn't that great? It feels like Stellar Blade was trying to be in conversation with Nier Automata, but was like through one of those tin can phones you used to make when you were a kid, and it didn't quite get the point.
Yeah. I mean, it's got some lovely graphics, nice bells and whistles and everything. Presentation, I think, was good.
It looks great. Played,
you know, and the systems are all solid. The combat was fine. I mean, but it was very much like every other third person medium attack, heavy attack, and then you've got your what else have you got there? You've
Parry.
Got your parries and your dodges, and I mean, it was all fine and all.
Yeah. But it didn't.
Something didn't click for me. Didn't excite me. Didn't make me want to play any more of it. Really.
Well, I remember right. I remember playing the Nier Automata demo at yours, and just being completely like going from having absolutely no interest in that game to be like, I must play this game. It was just there's something about the setup. There's something about how new it felt. How good it. how good it felt to do sword parries and combos, but also to be shooting at the same time. It felt like they'd managed to go like, right, what makes Devil May Cry and Bayonetta so addictive to play in terms of their action and everything else? And it felt like it had built upon the concepts of these games from Platinum and Capcom and gone like, right, this is the secret sauce. We're gonna tweak these little things so you can kind of fire and slash at the same time using different triggers and everything else. And I was like, yes, I'm all in on this. And watching the opening to Stellar Blade, I was like, oh, this is riffing on Nier. Some of this stuff is really cool. Those big, like, zeppelins with gothic architecture built onto the front of them, the drop ships at the start in the FMV was kind of cool. And I was like, okay, like, there's operatic music that feels very much like it's the Nier soundtrack, but okay, that's fine. Like, clearly Yoko Taro's even been out there talking about this game and everything else. And then you take control of it, and I'm like, well, this is a very nice-looking game. Obviously, like, it's meant to appeal to young guys because the women are very shapely and everything else. And I'm like, okay, I see what you're going for. And then fighting those weird organic alien creatures on the beach at the start felt very reminiscent of some of the weirder stuff you'd find in Bayonetta and also maybe a little bit of what I've seen in Souls games. It kind of had some Soulsy things, and there was some stuff that there was these big things with long arms. I was like, oh, this feels like it's out of Dead Space. This is kind of cool. It's taking influences from everywhere. And then I got to the end of that segment where you fought like a bigger enemy. And I was like, right, cool. How am I gonna do my shooty thing? How am I gonna whiz around this battlefield at like breakneck speed like a Bayonetta? What's my crazy I'm going to attack with my hair thing going to be, or am I going to get a devil trigger? And that didn't happen. And it's like, oh well, if you parry enough, you can hold parry and press triangle and then you'll do a bigger attack. And I was like, okay, yeah. And then
there was no special sauce to it. It was a very bland burger.
Yeah, it was. It was the blandest of burgers.
Maybe it had a bit of ketchup on there, but
I don't know, man. I'm not a ketchup person anyway, so maybe the wrong person to ask. But there was nothing in there that made me go like, oh my god, I could see how this callback can evolve. If anything, it just kind of reminded me of playing Wanted Dead, and it just seeming like at least Wanted Dead's weird and all over the place and like kind of interesting from that regard. But the combat just didn't do anything for me. And if the combat isn't doing anything for me, like right to the start, by the time I finished the demo, the nail in the coffin of me not buying this game was watching later boss fights and just seeing that it felt exactly the same. It was just her doing a parry and doing a combo thing where you had no control over it, and her like running her sword up an enemy. And I was like, this just doesn't seem very good.
It's like the death of a third-person action game.
No, I'll tell you what, right? It just feels like, to me, the presentation is clearly like AAA video game.
Yeah.
But the substance feels very much like B-tier PS2.
Unfortunately, well, more PS3, perhaps, I'd say.
Yeah, maybe. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, it didn't feel like it was really, even though it looked great, offering me anything more than a similar type of game I might have played on the 360, for instance.
Yeah.
Or the PS3, or that generation. I mean, maybe there's a lot of stuff later in the game but I didn't feel like the idea of the demo is it's got to sell you on the game and make you want to buy it. Well, there was not really enough in this demo to give me the inclination to buy this game, unfortunately.
No, it makes me want to like maybe borrow this game from someone if they pick it up, or I'll get it from a library or something else. Like,
but it depends on what you want. Depends on what you've played. Yeah. If you've played a lot of games like this before, it won't have a massive effect on you. If you've never played a game of this sort of, well, I'd be surprised if you're into video games, you never played anything like that before. But if your first foray into this sort of game, then this is solid. But I think there's it's not a lot of personality in it, really, in the cutscenes, the cinematic characters. It wasn't, you know, like something like Shadow of the Damned, you've got personality and you've got you know, dialogue that's interesting, and that there wasn't really anything there in the characters or the dialogue or the story so far, at least, that really did anything for me.
No, and that's, I don't know, like maybe more of it'll unfold.
Maybe
there's
maybe
stuff that's
turns
missing.
Into
from
quite
the
an
demo.
Interesting story. I'm not sure. Maybe the environments get really different, and it's, but of course, got to be the gameplay, isn't it? If that gameplay is satisfying enough to make you continue to play the game, then we're all good. But I don't feel that this gameplay necessarily was. And the whole camp thing just reminded me a lot of Tomb Raider, sitting at the camp doing the what's it called again? Skill tree type business. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about skill trees, but I feel really fed up with them. Maybe if there's a different way of doing it, but it works. It's quite a good mechanism for upgrading.
Yeah.
But I just felt again, it's like, oh, this played this kind of thing before, and it's been better.
I mean, I'm not as down on skill trees as you are, but like,
okay, fair enough.
It felt like the Stellar Blade one, much like, again, the Wanted Dead one, wouldn't necessarily do too much to my character. It feels like it feels like hollow progression. It's like, oh, well, you might be slightly faster or whatever, but it's, the main upgrade seemed to come from that last camp where you could upgrade your weapons or your health and this kind of stuff. Like, it doesn't feel, maybe there'll be minor skills within the skill tree that you can get. Like, there was that like blink dodge or whatever it is, but you get by the end of the demo. But it doesn't feel to me, the bones of it feel wrong. And like when I can't even enjoy the basic combat at the start and feel the fluidity of it, I'm like, I've played better versions of this game. Like, as
but
you say,
I feel there's more sort of like quests in it as well, and side characters and how it was advertised. I wasn't.
Well,
so
I mean,
it,
like
myself,
Nier.
Yeah.
And that's fine, but the traversal doesn't feel very good. The combat.
Oh,
doesn't
the
feel
swinging
very good.
It didn't feel. Yeah, the swinging off the as you're going over that bridge, and the swinging off the poles. That felt. I thought she'd swing more. I thought there'd be more pizzazz, more animation in it. Just she should have swung as. I feel like we're being very hypercritical, but there wasn't that spark, that energy, that excitement in the movement, really.
Which was, and I think yes, you are right. Maybe we are just like,
maybe we are, maybe we're just being really down on it. And I mean, I'm sure it's not a bad game. It's just not a particularly interesting game to me, and obviously not to you either. So.
And I think that's the thing, right? Like we've talked about it on this podcast. We play less video games than we used to, and part of that for me, why I feel like I play less things, is I just feel like I've played a lot of what we're getting right now.
Yes,
before.
Exactly. My exact sentiment about that experience I had with that demo, yeah.
And I think there's so much thrown into like AAA video games. Like, of course they're going to look good. Of course, like if you want to make a horny game like this, you're going to make a horny game like this, and it's going to appeal. But it just doesn't, from a gameplay perspective, which should be the main thing, just doesn't do anything for me. Mm. Ironically, right, in contrast to this, I've watched the first two episodes of the new Fallout show on Amazon, and I'm really enjoying it, despite me hating those games. I've tried several times to play Fallout, and I just can't do it. It just doesn't click with me. And I'm
it
like,
clicked with
but
me,
I like this universe.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. I enjoyed 76. I played 76 for maybe about over 76 hours when we were playing it regularly every week. And I quite like that world. I quite got quite into it. But I have to agree with you that the show is very good, and it's going to appeal to everyone, not just fans of the video game. But yeah, the TV show Fallout is great. So to put a positive spin on the end of this conversation, well, Stellar Blade's not very good. You can always watch the Fallout TV show, which isn't a game.
It isn't. It's related. No, I just to say, like, for a long time listeners to this podcast will know, like, I've talked about what my three favorite games are. It's Nier Automata, which admittedly means that Stellar Blade is going to be critiqued to hell because I love Nier Automata. But like, there's also narrative games like The Witcher, Metal Gear Solid 5. It's like possibility spaces, stuff you can't do in games, and Breath of the Wild. I go back and forth on whether like Breath of the Wild is in there or if it's or if it's Metal Gear Solid 5. I love both of those games equally. But I like games that do stuff new. I like games that are solid. Like, I mean, I love the Yakuza games, Tom. I will gladly play a medium attack, heavy attack, but like, it's got to feel good. And if it doesn't, I'm just not interested.
And you got to be invested in the world and the characters, and Yakuza does a good job of doing that, really, with an engaging story with likable characters. Whether this develops into that, I'm not sure, but as it stands, it didn't grab me in that respect at all.
I mean, Nier doesn't, so I don't think this will either, because it feels like a pastiche of Nier, but with, again, it feels like it misses the point of the things that makes Nier good. Yes, the atmosphere, the music, everything in concert, like, works. But at its course, because Nier's a really good game in terms of like combat mechanics, and also like it's doing new things and playing with the expectation of what a video game is, and I just don't see Celeblade doing any of that.
We could be proven wrong. I don't know what's good, the kind of reviews this is going to come out to. The demo didn't appeal to me, that's all I'll say, and I didn't finish the demo, in all honesty. I finished it.
I got up to that.
I crossed the bridge, didn't I? I crossed the bridge and I fought a couple of monsters and I thought, nah, that's it. And then I played Tekken 6, PSP version of Tekken 6, which you can now play on PS5.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, to be honest with you, Tom, you didn't really miss much. What you do is you kill a couple more enemies. You swing a couple more times. You do like some wonky Assassin's Creed segments where you climb up a wall. And then you fight a big enemy at the end, which is what I was saying. I was expecting to get more, like, something
you
different.
You fight quite a big enemy on the beach at the very beginning of the demo, don't you?
It's bigger. It's got horns. It fires lightning. It's not
probably
very
looks
fun.
Cool. I imagine it looks cool. Nice design.
It looks like a giant, like, fleshy stag beetle thing. It's fine. It looks cool. Anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe that segues quite nicely into this amazing realization I had that those games that are available now on PlayStation through the PlayStation Classics sort of area of the PlayStation Plus Extreme subscription. I don't know what they call it. It's not called Ultimate, is it? What's it called? PlayStation Plus?
I think it's called Ultimate, Extra, right? I don't know.
Ultimate. Anyway.
I've just got Essential because I'm a plebeian, but it's fine.
So, slowly but surely, Sony are making available a lot of PS1, PSP games playable on PS5, PS4 through this service, but also for those who aren't actually paying for that. If you happen to have bought the game back on PS3, like I did, or PSP,
really?
You can download them on your PS5. Ridge Racer Type 4, which I downloaded for PS3, also played that on PSP. It appeared in there. I had no idea. I just stumbled over it, and I was like, download. What? Oh, yeah, I own it. Of course, I bought it way back when. Download it.
Interesting.
Abe's Exodus, download. Tekken 6, download. And what is quite cool about the PSP games, particularly, actually, even the PS1 games look rather good. I don't know if they look any better than they did on PS3, but there's something going on there. Give them an extra sheen. But the PSP games, the resolution on the actual in-game graphics is incredibly high. They look a lot better than they do on the PSP. Of course, all the static graphics, like your health bars and the fighting games and the menu screens, everything is incredibly low resolution. It's terrible on a big screen. But the actual graphics of the game look very good indeed. So Soul Calibur Broken Destiny, PSP exclusive, been playing that, and Tekken 6 and Ridge Racer, the PS1. Version of Race Type 4, or the only version there is. Great. I'm really happy to stumble over that. I just wanted to mention it on the podcast that if you do have any games that you bought way back when on your PS3 or your PSP, and they have been made available on PS4 and 5 now, you can still download them. They've honored that purchase you made years and years and years ago.
Good. I'm going to go have a look. I hope that there's some of the stuff I own is in there. Though, admittedly, annoyingly for me, I did switch PS3. I did create a new PlayStation account when I moved to Denmark, so I'm imagining a lot of my PS3 stuff isn't there.
But your PS3 is a bit of a weird area, though. PS1 and PSP seem quite readily available, but there's some PS3 games on there which I know I have digitally, which I don't have the option to download. So it isn't work across the board But at least in terms of PSP and PS1, they do seem to work.
Well, fortunately, Tom Parry is a long-time lover of the PlayStation Vita. I bought a lot of that stuff, so let's see what I have.
Yeah, there's some good stuff available on there. So I mentioned a few. Also, Twisted Metal, the first one is on there, and Resident Evil 1 is on there. All the Ape Escapes, I think, are there.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any Crash games. No,
because I guess that would require additional, additional licensing.
And there's no Spyro games, I don't think. But I think Twisted Metal is Sony, so that makes sense why that's on there, isn't it? I think Twisted Metal's owned by Sony.
It does.
Yeah.
I'll have a look.
And Namco are all in on it, obviously, because I mentioned three Namco games there. So for me, that's great news. Ridge Racer 2
exactly.
For the PSP, if you've got a digital copy of that, you can download that as well.
Good. I'm sure all of our audience own digital copies of Ridge Racer 2.
Also have save states and rewind function.
Okay, that's actually kind of cool.
Yeah, it's really good. I had no idea they were going to that sort of lengths to please people who bought games ages ago. And you know,
cool. I will have a look. I hope there's some things on there I can download without having to upgrade my PlayStation account. That'd be nice.
Yeah, and you can buy these games as well at reasonable prices. You can buy them individually. You don't actually have to have the subscription in a lot of cases. Some you do. I think with PS3, you do have to have a subscription.
Yeah.
But if you're just a regular PS Plus subscriber and you see a PS1 game there that you fancy, you do have the option to buy it, like some like Worms for $3.99.
Okay,
that's
not
that
bad.
You can actually purchase PS1 and PSP at least separately.
I'll give that a look. I guess that's why they didn't shut those stores down in the end then, maybe, because they realised, oh, well, actually, we can still service this on the PlayStation 5.
I mean, when I think back, actually, I have known about this for even longer because I downloaded Resident Evil 1 with that.
Oh,
service.
Yeah, you mentioned this.
Ages ago.
I don't think we put two and two together.
No, then I just totally didn't. Oh, so I guess I thought, well, I did buy that ages ago. Okay, that's why I have access to it. But there's a lot more now. And Ridge Racer Type 4 is one of my favourite games of all time, so... To have that was really good.
Nice. Yeah. I wonder if the Persona games are on there, because I definitely own all of those for the PSP.
Ooh, that's a good question. I'm not sure about
I'll
that.
I'll have a look. Yeah. You don't own all the Persona games?
No.
Oh, interesting.
Well, I don't know if they've got a deal with Microsoft or not, obviously, because Atlas is Sega, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
I don't know if they're supporting PlayStation the same way they're supporting, I say, Game Pass, because there's a lot of Atlas stuff on Game Pass, isn't there?
There is, isn't there? And I mean, there's Day also one. That new Atlas game is coming out.
Mm.
It is coming out on the PS3, on the PlayStation 5 as well. Metaphor ReFantazio, I think is the name of the game.
Right, okay. Great
game. Game by Atlas.
Very memorable. Yeah. Rolls off the tongue.
I know. Tell me about it. A game I'm actually really excited about, but I had to Google the name of. I'll play that. God, I've even forgotten it. Oh, my days. ReFantazio. That's the only bit I remember. Metaphor. Okay. It's right. A metaphor, Tom. Do you get it? Do you get it? ReFantazio. There we go. I'll never forget the name of that game again. Speaking of games I could quite easily forget the name of, I did get something else out of the library because I was like, oh, let me have a look. They had, surprisingly, the newest Shirin the Wanderer game, which is a Spike Chunsoft joint.
Oh, yes. Yes, you just explained to me briefly about that before the podcast. Go on, Matt.
Oh, gosh, this is going to be a mouthful. So the subtitle of this newest Shirin the Wanderer game, which just came out in the end of February, so we're quite current talking about this, is a Shirin the Wanderer, the mystery dungeon of Serpentilio Island. Gosh, I don't know why I stumbled over that so much. Serpentilio Island. It is a Shirin the Wanderer game. You have probably never played one of these, Tom, because I imagine when I describe it to you, you may actually throw up a little bit in your mouth. It is a...
Not roguelike, is it?
Action role-playing roguelike game.
Oh,
one of the original roguelikes, in fact.
I see often, right... I often see games that look really cool, and I think, oh yeah, I that's like a cool platform game, and then it's like it's a roguelike.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, right? Like when you actually are like, oh, it's a roguelike. Generally, what that means is like, hey, it's procedurally generated things. Mm. Like, oh, great.
You'll be playing.
Shirin the Wanderer is a capital R roguelike. So much so that the series it comes from a series called Mystery Dungeon, and Mystery Dungeon is
not
a
just
Chunsoft game that was made. Well, I mean, it is the same series, right?
Yeah, it's not Chocobo just Dungeon. That,
yeah, and it started off as a Dragon Quest spin-off called Torenko's Great Adventure. Was the first game on the Super Famicom, and it was essentially like, hey, let's try and make a roguelike game. There's a game called NetHack, which I've never played, which is an old DOS game, essentially, very much in the vein of the original Rogue that spawned this all. And they were like, how can we do a game like this where every bit of the dungeon is procedurally generated and everything else, and you're stealing items and doing these things? And so they're like, well, this doesn't really work within the main canon of Dragon Quest. Maybe if we can take this side character called Toneko, who is the person that sells you gear in Dragon Quest, maybe we can be like, oh, this is how he gets all his gear, is he goes into dungeons and finds it, which is kind of a cool idea. The games themselves, though, never really made it over here until I think the first game was remade for the Nintendo DS after coming out on the Super Famicom. And there's two Game Boy games as well. It's a series that kind of has two branching paths in terms of like console games and portable games. Both of them are very well loved in Japan. Both of them are hard as nails, and both of them are intentionally hard as nails. The combat is kind of a little bit like the Ease games, if you've ever played those. Mm. YS. So, what you're doing, Ease, is...
I know of them, though.
Yeah. They're easy. Ironically, I actually bought the first three Ease games on the Famicom in a market last weekend because they were 10 kroner each. And I was just like, that's a bargain. Easy. And I picked them all up because they were a quid. And I was like, I don't even see good Famicom games in Japan anymore for this price. So, you're coming with me. Anyways, small digression. Generally, what happens is you... So, to begin at the beginning, with this game in particular, and generally across all the Shirin the Wanderer games, you find yourself having to go to a point on a map, and the progression of the game is based purely on roguelike things. So, unlike, say, a Rogue Legacy or any of these games that have roguelite elements, as they call them, well, you die, and you know, like you save your items, and you get progression, you get stronger, and then you keep going back through those areas and doing everything. Shirin isn't that. Shirin is, hey man, you die, you lose everything. You go back to the fucking start, and you start over again. And you, the thing that keeps you going is, oh well, I've learned how to deal with these enemies. I know I should buy these items in this place because it'll help me out. Oh great, I got a sword. That's +2. This is going to really help me in this area, and I can stay here and I can level up. It is a game that is very much based on systems, and how it works is not even like a Zelda game or anything. Like I said, its combat is very reminiscent of Ease, in that you're walking around a map, a square at a time, and when you were walking around a square at a time, enemies will come and walk as well. So it's like clockwork, kind of like how Crypto the Necro Dancer works. You know that everything moves to rhythm.
Yeah.
Everything is kind of moving the same way you are. So when you're pressing up, an enemy might move right, and it's like everything is kind of turn based in that. Like, I need to look around this area and think: do I want to go up there where there's an enemy? Am I going to get attacked from the side? And at first, I had the same reaction you would have had, I think, playing this game of like, oh, do I really want to go in for one of these? This feels like a lot of work.
You love them, don't you, Matt?
I like roguelikes. I don't like capital R roguelikes. I like a roguelite. I like the idea of procedurally generated levels. I like the idea of, oh, well, I'll butt my head up against this wall a little bit, but I'll get better at it and I'll progress. the fact that you get literally nothing, the fact that if you found a +3 sword and you're like, oh, amazing, how lucky am I to get this? And then I die and then I'm left with nothing and go like, oh, well, I'm probably going to never get that sword again. Okay, cool. Is a bit of a bitter pill to swallow for me. This game does have some interesting things to mitigate that I'll get into in a second. But generally, I died a couple of times and I was like, what the fuck is this game? How are you supposed to play this? How are you supposed to do it? And then I started going like, well, actually, maybe what I should be doing is running around these areas. Because every step you take regenerates your HP. So it's like, well, clearly they want me to kind of like run around a little bit and then go in for the kill rather than like just sitting here and bashing these monsters which seem to be getting me killed. And once I figured that out, I was like, well, there's a hunger meter also, and that if your hunger meter runs out, then you don't heal, so you need to kind of remember that, oh, I need to feed my character and
I don't like the sound of that.
But honestly, right, once you get the hang of these two things and how they work,
I don't think a hunger meat has ever made any game better.
Hey, man, you just said you're into Fallout 76. You can't be like, oh, no.
I don't like that. I don't like that element of it. I'll tell you now.
Yeah. But so, generally speaking, once you get an idea of like, well, instead of healing my health, I need to keep this hunger meter relatively high, and it doesn't like tick down a point at a time, there's a weird clockwork nature to this game that I kind of admire.
Okay.
That said, the strange thing, and what I mentioned in like how they mitigate some of this roguelike stuff, is there is moments where after you clear the first area, which I managed to do after a couple of tries, I was like, okay, I get what this game's about. I died. And I was like, oh, that's annoying. I wonder if I now continue from the second town I got after this area. But it's like, no, if you die, you go back to the start. But what you can do is you can send out an SOS online and then someone will essentially come in and like tap on your corpse and revive you. And I was like, oh, great. Well, cool. I'll just do that now. And so I did it. And it's like, well, it can take up to 7 days. Do you want to go back to the start or do you want to go back to the main menu? And I was like, what? So I can't do anything other than start a new game and wait to be rescued.
Wow.
It's like a very strange way to do that. I would rather there was just like a, hey, continue option, or hey, you have limited things that need to recharge and you can use them to continue or something. But no, so what I ended up doing was I clicked back to the title screen and then it was like, okay, I guess I'll turn this on later tonight and hope that someone's rescued me.
Mm.
It's a very, very strange system and I don't really gel with it.
It looks like a PSP game.
I was going to say, it doesn't look very beautiful. It's not a very cutting-edge game. The story is also very basic. It's like, hey, we're wandering. Me and my friend, my talking weasel friend, who I've already forgotten the name of, we were wandering and we run into people and they say, hey, there's a big yokai and it's trying to block out the sun and we should go and slay the yokai because that's what Shirin does. He's a wandering sword for hire, kind of like what's his face in Kung Fu.
Mm-hmm.
And that is my experience of the game. I cleared one area. I was like, okay, I get what this is about. And then I died. And then it was like, well, you can wait 7 days for someone to rescue you. So I was like, okay, I guess I'll turn the game off and play it again sometime in the week. It's very odd. It's very odd, but it's got me intrigued, is what
I will
say.
It's a full-priced game. I've seen it here on Amazon, 40 quid.
We are very lucky this even came out, Tom, because there have been several Shirin the Wanderer games that have not even come to North America, let alone Europe.
You say it's worth that price? Entry? Price of admission?
I mean, yes, I would say so. It feels like a very
full-featured
game. Wouldn't
wait for a discount
game.
Or something like
I
that?
I mean, I might. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm still waiting for a discount on Prince of Persia, and that does feel like a very robust, very full-featured game. I would say, hey, if you like roguelikes, give this a shot. If you like JRPGs and like action RPGs that are a bit more turn-based than usual, I would say give it a shot. I also think if you really want to see like weird games like this continue to come out, then it's worth buying. So that's what I'll say. I'm not going to lose any sleep over Ubisoft going like, maybe should we charge £40 for what is essentially a quote-unquote indie game by today's standards, but I do think Shiren the Wanderer's got some cool stuff to it. I will continue to play a little bit of it. I will turn it on, like I said, tonight to see if I've been saved. If I haven't, I'll probably start all over again and give it another go. There is some cool things going on in it that I kind of like. Though that said, if I were to get like 30 hours into this game or however long a run is, and then I died near the end and then I had to start all over again, would I feel the same way? Probably not. I don't know. I think where I am in the story and where I am along this map is early enough that I don't really mind dying and redoing it again.
And that
I think it may become a bit repetitive.
And it's available on what formats, just the Switch, is it?
I think so, yeah. As far as I'm aware, let me just double check.
I'm also double checking as well.
It is the Nintendo Switch. It is not on any other platform.
Ooh, so if you've not got a Switch, you're going to miss out.
To be fair,
there is one on the PC. I see Steam's got one here. Different one. The Tower of Fortune and Dice of Fate.
Yeah, one of them on the PC, one of them is on the Dreamcast, and I think that was the only one on a home console that hasn't come out on a Nintendo platform. I do think one or two of them are eventually ported to the Vita and the PSP, but I genuinely think most of them have started on Nintendo platforms. Because there's it's just a weird game. It's one that I own the remake of the first Shiren the Wanderer game.
There's a Wii one, Matt.
Yes. Yeah, there is. It didn't come out in Europe, though. Again, North America, Japan.
The PSP version was later released. Yeah. That is just called Shiren the Wanderer 2008.
A lot of the games are just called Shiren the Wanderer. It makes it slightly confusing to figure out which one is which.
Right. And that also was quite well received. So it's, it's quite a popular series.
It is a long-running series.
I think
it's just like, if you like this game, it's another one of them, you know. It is a good thing. It's my first time playing one. Like I said, I own the DS one. I have the Japanese versions of the Game Boy one, because there's one for the regular Game Boy and there's one for the Game Boy Color, but I've never played either of them because they're relatively impenetrable without knowledge of Japanese, from what I've seen.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Hey, I'm going to continue to play a little bit more of it. Maybe I'll talk about it next time.
Sounds good, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
I have picked up something interesting recently. I'm not sure if you have this or not. I imagine you might have decided to. There's a little backstory about this. My Atari Lynx, the batteries expanded and got stuck inside the battery compartment. My model Atari Lynx. And try as I might, I cannot get them out. So my Lynx is now, unless I start soaring into the battery compartment, I'm never going to get those batteries out. I took it apart to try and do it, but I couldn't. Perhaps it'll work still off mains. I'm not 100%. I haven't tried that. But it spurred me on to look out there on eBay, see if there's any. How cheap they are nowadays. Of course, they're not that cheap. We're talking about the region of that one. For a nice one, you know, just maybe just less than 100 or around that sort of mark, maybe. Yeah. So I was like, oh dear, was it really worth me spending that amount of money to play a few Lynx games that I've got? So I decided, no. I wasn't going to do that.
I know where you're going with this, obviously.
And then I recalled that Analog do a series of adapters for the Analog Pocket, which I happen to have. For about £100 for the three adapters. Now, so this was a more tempting option. So I ordered the three adapters, which are for the Atari Lynx, for the Neo Geo Pocket Color, and the PC Engine TurboGrafx 16. So lovely. I don't own any PC Engine or TurboGrafx games, but I do have a few Neo Geo Pocket Color and regular games, and also, of course, Atari Lynx games.
Nice.
So it was great. So I updated my firmware and very easy process. And now I can. I was playing Sonic Pocket Adventure on there the other day, and it was fun playing through that game again.
Cool. I own several games for all of the consoles. I don't really have the most robust Game Gear collection.
I have the Game Gear adapter, but that was separate, isn't it? That was one I bought when I got the system.
Oh yeah, sorry. I didn't realize. I had forgotten that one of them was a Neo Geo Pocket Color one. I for some reason in my head it was PC Engine, Atari Lynx, and the Game Gear. Okay, well, I'm going to pick these up. These have been something actually. Thank you for reminding me of their existence because I was looking the other day at my shelf.
Not cheap.
Well, I mean,
the shipping's half the price of the bloody thing.
Yeah, it's not great.
There's no extra tax to pay on it, at least.
No, but I honestly, I think a lot of stuff coming from the US is very expensive to ship these days. So much so that
it came 2 days after I ordered it.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
It was amazing. Ordered one day, it nearly came the next day.
Wow.
That's
insane.
And it was the morning of the day after, the day after I ordered it. I could not believe that. Honestly, it was like, I don't know how they got it out so quick from America within 2 days.
I guess they've just got very good distribution.
They shipped it immediately, basically. I ordered it and I saw it had been shipped like minutes after I ordered it, pretty much.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, so...
They ship within 24 to 48 hours.
Amazing service, and the product itself works great. I can't save states on Sonic, though. There's a button command for saving states. The function isn't available. It says it's not available on that game. I don't know if that's the same for all Neo Geo Pocket Colors or what, but you can't save states on Sonic Pocket Adventure for some reason.
I think there are some games that they were having issues with. I know with Pokemon and stuff with batteries, some of them were actually wiping the cart saves and stuff as a result.
Well, that might have happened to me. Because I lost my Pokemon Crystal save again. Yeah. Because this time I lost it was down to the internal battery, replaced the battery, and then at some point, I just lost everything on Crystal. It hasn't happened with Silver yet. I replaced the battery in that and been playing that on the Pocket. Yeah. So, I'm hoping that's not going to happen.
Fingers crossed. That would be very frustrating.
PC Engine games, anything I should get apart from Jackie Chan? No, I want that.
Right, so I would say there's loads of good PC Engine games.
They're pricey though, aren't they? If you look at PC Engine games,
they're insane now. Like there are games right I bought when I first went to Japan, and they're not very good. They were like C-tier PC Engine games that people were like, oh my god, why are you buying that? And I'm like, well, because it's 900 yen, which is like a quid, so why not? And those games are now worth like 300-400 quid. So I can't recommend you anything on PC Engine because
a lot of them are shooters
Yeah, no, I mean, it's like the Bonk games are good, the Zonk games are good, like there's lots of good PC Engine stuff.
There's a port of Street Fighter 2, but there's only four accessible buttons once you've got the adapter plugged in, because the adapter covers up the shoulder buttons.
Oh, really? Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. So if you have a six-button game like Street Fighter, which they released, obviously, a six-button controller to play it effectively on the PC Engine, you can only use four of the buttons, unless you can use Start and Select, but I couldn't imagine playing it like that.
That's not great. So if I were to name you some games, like obviously all of the Sega ports are really good, Splatterhouse is really good, there's a very good port of Parasol Stars, the version of Salamander and R-Type are very good.
Yeah, R-Type would be of interest if it wasn't like too expensive. I think it's sort of like going for around 30 quid on eBay at the minute.
The thing is with PC Engine collecting as well, where you may
I'm not going to collect for it. Definitely
no, exactly, not. And that's what I was going to say to you is that people who collect for PC Engine are very particular. It's like Japanese Saturn collectors; they want the end card and they want the little spine thing. Oh, and like this is why the games, this is why the subpar vertical scrolling shooters I got were so cheap, is because they didn't have the side card. And I was like, I don't care.
Well, that's only there because. Well, there's not much point in it, really, is there? I have a few Japanese CDs. Funny enough, I have one right here, and that's only there so they can have the title of the album in Japanese.
Yeah,
I think And the track listing in Japanese, because as it is, if it's like, this is Wings, you know, Paul McCartney, yeah, it's all English. So that's just there for if you speak Japanese.
I mean, sometimes it is. Like, obviously, if it's complementing a Japanese thing, maybe it'll be like, oh, you know.
That's
like,
right, yes, some of the features of
the game and extra text and everything else.
I've got some examples of them all over the shop here, because I never make a point of buying games with something called spine cards.
Spine cards, yeah.
Yeah, I never actually seek them out, but occasionally if I buy an import game, I'll get one. What do they say on them? Let's find out. Here's one. With One Piece, right? One Piece Grand Battle 2. The name of the game on the side in English, which is on that side anyway. And then something.
Yeah, probably just says like, oh, it's the most amazing fighting game you've ever played. See this exciting battle with Luffy versus Crocodile or whatever the bad guy is at the time. Yeah, it's just because it completes the artwork for a lot of these things, and you don't have the PlayStation logo and all of this other stuff otherwise.
Oh, right, okay. Fair enough.
People are just really into it, Tom. I don't understand it either.
Oh, yes, like, okay.
I do the same thing you do. I open the case, I put the spine card inside the case, and I never think about it again.
That's what I do, Matt. Yeah.
But yeah, it is what it is. And that's like, nice, because of that, and because of the particulars of PC Engine collecting,
right.
I genuinely think
they come in CD
people...
cases, don't they?
They do, yeah. And I mean, like, heaven forbid it's a loose cart. I felt this with Master System collectors. Is that Master System collectors do not want loose carts, which is why loose cartridges are very affordable if you just want to play the games.
And then even better, nice plastic boxes.
You can get it with a nice plastic box because they all want the manual. And I'm like, it's fine. I get it. I understand the completionist aspect of it, of like, well, you want it boxed, but like, I just want to play the game. I don't mind. It can be loose. I don't care.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So there you go. A great experience with those adapters. Look forward to trying out a PC Engine game one day. But I'm not going to break the bank on buying anything. But if I can find Jackie Chan for the right price, because I love that game on the NES. And I hear the PC Engine version is superior. I mean, at least graphically.
It's a 16-bit console versus an 8-bit console. I imagine you are probably right. It's probably very nice on the PC Engine.
Yeah, very different sprites. You can really see Jackie. Jackie looks more like Jackie, you know, more like a caricature of Jackie Chan. Nice big head. But there is something about the style of the original NES one that's quite nice too, because it's very stylized to allow for the graphical limitations of the system.
You got me looking at PC Engine games again. This is a road I don't want to go down. I do have a PC Engine. I have a working engine upstairs.
Yeah.
I don't want to... No, not going to. I need to mod that thing.
Sorry. I mean to open up a rabbit hole there.
A can of worms. Well, no, thank you for reminding me that the Analog Pocket has these adapters, though, because I think I may finally pull the trigger and buy these at the end of the month.
Yeah, I'll be kicking myself, because every time I bought something, I've paid separate shipping on everything, even the Game Gear adapter, which I bought in the same time as the bloody console, because I made a mess.
Forgot to add it.
Well, yep. I forgot to add it, and I asked immediately, oh, can you just ship it together? No. All right. That was a shame. I think they'd probably ship the other thing so quick, you know, as they do.
I've noticed that analog stuff is slowly going up in price, so I may just buy these now and just get it over with.
Well, I looked for the same thing on eBay. It was probably nearing 100 quid more expensive to buy in the UK from eBay. So obviously people are trying to make a profit, of course, make quite a large profit. So just order it direct from analog, the US.
It's because analog stuff comes in waves usually, and while they've said that, hey, we're going to keep the analog pocket stuff is like an evergreen item. Obviously, when it first came out, you couldn't get it for love nor money, which is why I never got one at launch, and kind of partially kind of fell out of love with the idea of owning one, and then I finally got one, and I was like, oh, actually, no, I'm glad I bought this. It's really nice.
It is nice, isn't it? Yeah. I haven't got the dock myself.
I do.
I'm not made of money.
I used it once, and I was like, oh, this would really help with biographic things, but then I didn't get the 8-bit do and everything else. And I was like, oh, well, I haven't put out videos in ages. I'll figure this out when I eventually get back around to it.
Yeah, I think if you are putting out videos, then the dock is quite a nice thing to have.
Yeah, for sure, but it's expensive. I just noticed
it's the same price as those three cartridge adapters, about $100.
No, it's gone up. That's what I'm saying. It's $129 now. $129 now.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. I picked up some games, like nothing incredible. I just happened to see some weird stuff at flea markets recently. As I mentioned, I got the first three E's games for the Famicom. I got a Faxanadu.
I love that. Faxanadu.
Faxanadu. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm not going to get into Faxanadu. It's got Faxanadu. A weird and complicated history of that game, of being a spin-off of different games. Gosh, what? So Faxanadu is part of the it's the Dragon Slayer series. I thought it was. So I just wanted to double check before I said it. It's a Falcom game.
Right, okay.
Dragon Slayer is a weird series that has multiple spin-offs on different consoles and everything else. I'm not going to get into it. Lots of the Dragon Slayer games aren't actually called Dragon Slayer. They're called Xanadu or Faxanadu and everything else. Grabbed it. It was £1. I was like, I'm not going to leave this. This cartridge looks sick. And then I also, weirdly, at a different market, ran across a lady who I usually run across who was selling a lot of retro game stuff. And usually what I end up doing is I go through her giant tub of games she's managed to acquire in between the year of this market, because clearly she's buying on Facebook Marketplace and all of this stuff.
Oh, and if you're a new listener, by the way, Matt lives in Denmark.
I do. This is true. And so I went through this giant tub of video games, and I was like, well, you know, there was one or two like slightly rarer Game Boy games, or like I got a copy of DuckTales 2 because my label is buggered, and I was like, oh, well, this is a really nice copy of DuckTales 2, and it's relatively affordable compared to what DuckTales 2 goes for, so I grabbed that. And then as I was looking through the rest of the other stuff, she pulled out another tub and was like, oh, I've got some Atari stuff. And I'm like, interesting. Don't see Atari stuff much in Denmark. And so I just ended up buying some Atari games because they were £2. And they had really nice
labels. You have a console to play those games on?
I do have a 2600. The Junior, though, unfortunately, not a Woody. I still need to buy a Woody. I want one. I have the Lego version next to my television, and one day I will replace it with a proper Atari 2600 because I love the look of that console. Lego one, by the way, very good. I love that. I love that model. It is very nice. That's why it's on my hardwood thing next to my CRT. Anyways, I bought a copy of Yar's Revenge because I don't own it and I've never owned it. And even though I've played it on the Atari 2600 collection, I think this sparked my interest in owning some of those games.
There's some sort of Yar's game coming from Way Forward for the Switch, maybe other platforms.
There is.
You saw the indie stream the other day.
I did, yeah. I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't think Yar's Revenge is a very good game. I'll be honest with you.
I must have played it on one of the Atari compilations. I don't recall it capturing my interest very much.
No,
it's a weird one, isn't it? With that sort of coloured sort of wall. Is that the one on down one side of the screen? Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that is the one. It's by what the heck is the guy's name? The guy who did E.T. It's the same designer. Howard Scott Warshaw. It's that weird game with the glitchy thing, and then you're a bug behind it trying to shoot stuff. Yeah. Like I said, I played it on the Atari 2600 collection. I didn't own it. It was there. It was cheap. Even though I'm going through the, I should get rid of games. I'm like, well, if I've got an Atari 2600, I should have like at least some of the games that make this console worth owning. So I picked up Yar's Revenge. I picked up Crystal Castles, which is a game that it's a decent Atari 2600 game. While I find it very difficult, I love the artwork and the bear on the label is pristine. So I was like, okay, well, even if this just stands up on a shelf, it's going to look nice.
Well, I have that on the Spectrum. There you go.
Yeah?
We can move on.
I've never played it on any other console but the 2600. Well, that's a lie. I played it on the PS5 in the Atari collection, but my cousin used to own it. I like the game.
Yeah.
Grab Pac-Man. I know it's a terrible port Pac-Man, but nah, it was there. Then the other two things I grabbed that I've never seen before, one of them particularly rare, was a Goliath video game system game called Open Sesame, which is just a like one in
Goliath
one of these unlicensed
game system.
Yeah, it's an unlicensed Atari 2600 game.
Right.
Which I'm always intrigued by. You know, loads of people put out Atari games. Like, loads of... The reason for the quote-unquote video game crash was that a lot of bad video games entered the market from different companies. From what I could tell online, I've never tried Open Sesame. I should give it a go. I should finally hook up my Atari and play it. But it seems like a decent one of those. It was one of these games that got licensed in lots of different markets. And there's also a DOS version of it, so it can't be too bad. Mm. Yeah, it looked interesting. So I was like, okay, I'll grab that. Anytime I see unlicensed Atari stuff, I'm always like, this could be really bad, but it's probably also obscure. So I just grabbed it for the sake of it. And then the game that I absolutely grabbed, because I knew what it was they had a Tiger Vision Minor 2049 Volume 2, which is one of the last games released for the Atari 2600 and therefore is worth a lot more than £2. So I was like, ah, grand. Rare Atari game. That's nice. Yeah.
I've picked up a few things.
Fine.
Not very many, but I've been getting into picking up Namco games for the PS1. Japanese Namco games.
Yeah, I mean, like, after our last conversation on this, I'm not surprised.
It's a bit silly, really, I suppose. I do have a lot of these Namco games already on PAL, but it is nice to play them full screen, full speed on the PS1. And yeah. What did I get, you may wonder? Just Ridge Racer and Gunbalina, which is actually... what's it called now? Point Blank 3. Very cheap. Just happened, stumbled across an auction ending on eBay. You know how you do it. Couple of quid. You know, I'll have that. So added them to my growing Namco PS1 collection, which I have the Tekkens and some of the Ridge Racers, all the Ace Combats. And now I've added a few more to that little collection. I also picked up Crash 2 because I have Crash 1. Japanese, so I've got Crash 2 Japanese, yeah. And they're quite interesting for the artwork in the package and very cheap. So, you know, plays very well.
I love the 2. Japanese Crash covers. I almost bought Crash Bandicoot Carnival.
Right. Which is Crash Bash, is it? Or?
Yeah, it's Crash Bash. Just because I like the cover of it, and Crash is doing a cheeky thumbs up. I saw this in Super Potato, and I was like, "Oh, I should buy that," and then I didn't because I was like, "I've got this game. I don't need to own it." I've just seen that there's a Korokoro comics Crash Bandicoot series, and I need to read it. I need to.
Also,
own this.
I think the Japanese version of Crash 2 has sort of like unique Japanese theme song. I didn't recognize it, like a sort of like Crash theme sung in Japanese at the beginning, which was.
Really? So it doesn't do the dunk, 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 dunk?
No,
dunk,
no, it has a little dunk, song. Dunk, like if Crash was an anime, like as a song with lyrics.
Well, this is what I'm telling you, Tom. Korokoro Comics is a manga. There's a Crash manga. I've not read it, and I need to now, because he looks like the Japanese super deformed Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah.
I need this in my life.
You know, for a couple of quid, I'm quite happy to add that to the collection.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So that's really all I can recall picking up as of late myself.
Oh, I also bought the GBA Shantae game because I talked about it on the podcast. It's now, the pre-orders are now closed, and I bit the bullet on the last day. I was like, well, I don't really love ordering from Limited Run for the same reasons. Like as much as I like the products that Limited Run put out, yes, sometimes quality, not great. But I
was kind of keen on the Sparkster collection, but I didn't pull the trigger on that.
Yeah.
Also, the soft toy was very tempting.
I'm still waiting for my copy of my copy of Trip World that I could have got the Oro Oro, the plush with, and I regret not buying that plush.
Probably all going to come very collectible and very expensive now.
I'm sure.
Those sort of services, I did receive a couple of games recently, which I pre-ordered months and months ago, from Pix and Love. One was King of Fighters 13 Global Match for PS4. Yeah. And so nice to have that. It's the usual quality you'd expect. If you want to see a video of the unboxing, head over to the Blast Process, as blastprocess.com or our YouTube channel, and you can take a look at that. And I also got the Sonic Origins Deluxe Collector's Edition, which is very different. It's huge. It's like a not quite as big as a vinyl size, but it's a box with a slip card slip cover. You pull it off. You've got the acrylic picture of the art from the box, which is. Yeah. Kind of into, I guess you put it on the wall. You've got four art prints that you can frame. You've got a book, an art book, which is quite nice and features some artwork that's not in other. There is a Sonic Pix and Love book, which I have. It's got other things which aren't in there, so it's quite nice. Of course, you get the game.
Yeah.
Overall, though, the package is rather pleasant. I was actually very surprised how heavy everything was and how thick the card was. And it's a very quality item, limited to. Is it 500 or something like that?
200 copies.
That's it? I think it's 500.
I'm looking at it. Which version did you get? Because this is the PS5.
PS5. Is there only one type or is there a couple of different limited versions?
Let me look.
it's a limited editions, but it's very nice. As when I put the video, because I've got an unboxing of that on the YouTube channel, Blast Process, and the website, they were still in stock. You could still buy that. You couldn't buy the King of Fighters thing because that had gone ages ago. But
yeah,
the Sonic one was still available last time I looked, if you're interested in that.
I've just seen that Pix and Love has an Apollo Justice Ace Attorney Collector's Edition for the Nintendo Switch, and I need to close the window
for get away
some
from
Phoenix
that.
Wright.
Yeah. So that's a nice thing to have as a Sonic fan, you know, way back when I pulled the trigger on that, and nice to have. Nice to have. Not 100% necessary. I wouldn't be buying anything like that at the minute, but it's a quality collector's edition if you are after something like that.
Nice.
Yes. Another thing, I've completed the story mode in Tekken 8, which isn't incredibly long, but rather enjoyable and, worth playing through. For sure.
Okay.
Very epic cool. battle at the end. Do you know sometimes in fighting games you have a stupidly ridiculous fight with not a normal character? I'm thinking of like Tekken 6 and Azazel, which is a big mythical beast. It's horrible to fight and feels incredibly unfair.
Yeah. Well, the end of Street Fighter 4.
Yes, that sort of thing. The end fight in Tekken 8 is between Jin and Kazuya, which obviously is what you'd expect, but it's a traditional, normal fight. Previously, you're playing like on a rock in space with Angel version Jin and Devil Kazuya, and that's pretty epic. But the actual final fight is like the I think there was a teaser trailer that showed in-game engine teaser trailer that showed them fighting in the rain back when Tekken 8 was first announced, and basically it's that. And it goes on forever. Every time you think you've beaten him, there'll be another stage to it. But it never feels unfair. It just feels very epic and very sort of like, what was it? Oh, I'm trying to think of the word. When you have like a scripted sort of situations happen throughout the fight. It's very cool. There's also like a Tekken Force part of the game, which was like the scrolling beat 'em up bit. In Tekken 3. And also there was a bit like that in Tekken 6 as well, where you're fighting multiple enemies in a war. There's a big battle between all like the good forces and the bad forces. Mishima Corporation and then the good guys. and they're fighting each other in a huge battle. And you play as, that's when you get to play several different characters, like King. You can go into the battlefield, and it's a bit like a Dynasty Warriors type game where you're like pile driving enemy soldiers and things.
I want to play Dynasty Warriors Tekken. That sounds dope.
It's a fun story mode with very high production values, and it's very enjoyable and not too long to play through. I'd recommend it. It's another string to the bow of Tekken 8, which is a great package all around. Cool. So I very, very much enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
That's me. Yes, I don't think I've got anything else to report this time around. No?
Fair enough. I again, Tekken 8 is a game that I think I will try and get out of the library.
Try and get it out of the library. Play through that story mode. I think you'll enjoy it.
I would love to. Okay. Well, if there is no more to be discussed, no new business, we will bring the podcast to a close. Thank you, as always, everybody, for listening. Tom, thank you for podcasting with me.
Oh, it was a pleasure.
And if you like the podcast, you can find us in a variety of places, such as on tomandmattattack.com/podcast, blastprocess.com. We are also on Facebook at facebook.com/tomandmattattack, on X at TMAcast, at GameBoyle for me, at TomParry11 for him. And then you can listen to it, obviously, in those pre-mentioned places, as well as on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, Cheeky Rit, Subscribe, etc., etc. Tom, that was a pleasure, mate. Thank you for talking video games with me. See, we started on a down note, and then we started going like, oh, yeah, video games, they're not so bad after all.
No, not at all. No. Oh, I haven't got Xbox Live Ultimate anymore, and I don't miss it.
Really? It ran out after all that time?
Game Pass Ultimate. Yeah. Game Pass Ultimate.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, though, games that I got on Xbox Live Gold ages and ages ago, like 360 ones, like Virtua Fighter 5, which haven't disappeared.
Oh, so that's good.
That's good, because I'm not technically subscribed to Gold anymore. I don't think I am, unless there's a basic Gold that you're automatically subscribed to. But I'm not paying Microsoft anything.
Don't say that on the record. Right, okay, mate. Well, go off and commit your embezzlement of Xbox, and we'll speak next week. Everybody out there, thank you for listening, and be sure, as always, game on.